Welcome to Story Chats at Inspi Romance. I am not Elizabeth Madry. I'm Valerie Comer, and I'm here with my co-host, Narelle. And we've got a guest today, Melody Carlson.
Hi, glad to be here.
Elizabeth has been called away to a family emergency, so we're just gonna wing it today and see how it goes. Melody has been a guest with us before. You guys have probably seen her. But she's back today to talk about her newest book, Just for the Summer. She has written more than 200 books with sales of around 6.5 million. That's books or dollars. Which is that?
Books.
Darn, eh? For teens, women, and children.
I didn't pay for all of them.
That's a lot of books, but mostly she considers herself a storyteller. Her novels range from serious issues like schizophrenia, Finding Alice, to lighter topics like house flipping, A Mile in My Flip-Flops. But most of the inspiration behind her fiction comes right out of real life. Her young adult novels, such as Diary of a Teenage Girl, True Colors, etc., appeal to teenage girls around the world. Her annual Christmas novellas become more popular each year. She's won a number of awards, including Romantic Times Career Achievement Award, the Rita, and the Gold Medallion. And some of her books have been optioned for film and TV. Carlson has two grown sons and makes her home in the Pacific Northwest with her husband and yellow lab dog. Thanks for being here today, Melody.
Thank you for having me. And we no longer have the yellow lab dog.
Oh, that is sadness.
It is.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
It's rough because our pets have such a short lifespan compared to ours.
Yeah,
I know. And she almost made it to 16, which is really old for a lab.
Aww.
But yeah, she was a good girl.
Yeah.
Aww.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll have a little moment of silence for that.
Yeah.
Let's start as we usually do by asking you to tell us a little bit about the book, please.
Yeah. Well, it just for the summer. It's a lighthearted read. It's kind of one of those swapping stories where two people are disenchanted with their own lives, and they both work in the hospitality industry. And one of them, the one that is in Seattle, Jenny Masters, she's been doing the same job for quite a while, even though she's pretty young. She started really young, kind of followed her mother, and she's got more of the hard knock life. But she's worked her way up, really hard worker. But her boss is difficult. And so she starts looking at this job swap site for hospitality jobs. And over, not too far away, but in Idaho, we have Jacqueline, who's been working for her grandfather. And she's actually got a degree in hospitality, whereas Jenny doesn't. But Jenny's working at the very chic boutique Seattle hotel.
Right.
And meanwhile, Jacqueline's working at the kind of scruffy fishing lodge that's owned by her grandfather and not liking it. So they decide to swap, and that's kind of where we launched the story from. Is this how does swap go? It's supposed to be just for the summer.
Yes.
So Beth's question, we're going to kick off with it because I've got it in my notes and it's perfect right here. She says, "I love the premise of a job swap. Can you tell us a bit about where that idea came from?"
I am not even really sure where it came from. I've always loved swap stories. I've done a couple of them. I've got one where a girl from New York swaps with an Amish girl.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Sounds fun. Yeah.
And I've got one where they swap houses at Christmas time. And I just thought it's just fun to play with. You know, I remember as a kid reading that story, Country Mouse, City Mouse.
Right.
And just being sort of enchanted by that whole, you know, walking into another world. And I just think it's a fun thing to play with as an author. And probably there's a little bit of me that wouldn't mind swapping at sometimes, you know.
Well, that second question to follow up was, what job would you want to swap for a limited period of time?
Yeah, well, the hard thing is I love writing. So but I've worked at a lot of different jobs before I really settled into writing, which I love being able to draw from that. I really liked working in interior design, although I like interior design and I do it for friends and myself, but when I did it as a job, I had kind of a hard boss and hard clients, and it was
sort of like Jenny.
It wasn't much fun, but if I was in my own business and I was calling the shots, I think maybe it would be kind of fun.
So you'd like to job swap with your boss?
Yes. I didn't really appreciate some of her clients. They were a little too hoity-toity for me. And I like helping people, but I don't like, I remember still, you know, somebody complaining over the flaws that were in the raw silk drapes. Well, raw silk drapes, yes, besides being really expensive, are supposed to have flaws in them.
Exactly.
Trying to explain that, you know, things like that. I wouldn't mind being my own boss.
What they really wanted was fake ones that they could tell people were real.
Probably. No. Well, yeah, they could tell them they were real. But their friends probably would have known. So I don't know. Probably wouldn't work.
Well, that makes it tough. Narelle?
Yeah.
Well, we're doing really well today because all our questions are going to line up really nicely. So I really loved reading this book, and I loved reading it in season because it's summer in Australia. We're recording this in January. So I got to read a summer book in summer. So that's always very exciting for me. But anyway, let's talk about bully bosses, because there's two of them in this story. Now, there's one that Valerie's going to raise a bit later and mention, because I had a previewed her question, so I know where we're going. But I'm going to talk about the other one. So in chapter one, the story opens with Ginny, who's in the Seattle hotel, dealing with her absolutely horrible boss, Diana. Now, Diana is always right. She blames Ginny for everything that goes wrong, irrespective of who's at fault. It's everything's Ginny's fault. And even though Diana forgot to make a really important booking for a friend, this whole disaster happens. And of course, Diana could never be wrong. Everything's Ginny's fault, and she's prepared to fire her, which of course leads into the swap. So I totally understood why Ginny wanted to escape the toxic work environment, because any job would be better than being bullied and manipulated by Diana, who's just awful. So at the start of the story, what's going on with Ginny, and why did she put up with all the bully boss behavior from Diana? Because she's been putting up with this for a very long time. It's not just 6 months, we're talking years.
Okay, now you're really testing my memory, because I did write the book. But Jenny's mom was raising the two daughters, and the mom worked in the hotel, and it was kind of a hard knock life for them. And so Jenny, as a teenager, started working in the hotel and helping to raise her younger sister, who was quite a bit younger. And then the mom passed away, and then Jenny was left with this kind of crummy hotel job and a sister to raise. But Jenny is just a real strong survivor, hard worker. And so she starts putting everything into it. And in a way, it's almost like she's really running the hotel, although Diana takes all the credit and she is the boss. But I don't want to give things away too much, but she'll find out that she really needed Jenny. But so Jenny's trying to raise her sister. And so what she finds out at the very beginning of this story is her sister's finally through college, med school, and she's got this, they were going to do a house share together. And this was something that Jenny had been looking forward to, finally getting out of this scruffy little apartment downtown. Blech. And but her sister gets this wonderful opportunity to go work on the other side of the country in a clinic that just is perfect for her. So Jenny is, you know, she's like, okay, it's time to leave. I can leave now, because she's lost that and her job. Blah. So she starts looking for the job swap.
And it was very much an interesting situation, and I just wanted to have a few little words with Diana.
And a big hug for Jenny.
About how unrealistic expectations and workload stress is not acceptable in the workplace, and that she should know better. Yes, but anyway, moving on.
I imagine she felt trapped by the income as well.
Yes.
Because she doesn't have a degree or any other job experience besides this exact job. And so where is she going to make this kind of money if she leaves? Right.
Exactly. And yeah, who's going to hire somebody who doesn't have a degree? You know, when she got started, maybe a degree wasn't as important. And of course, she was working her way up. But, you know, working her way up is how she really learned the industry from the inside. And I actually have a cousin who managed hotels really big fancy hotels, and he was just a learner of life, you know, and he would just like, he would go down to places like the laundry and he would figure it out and really get a good rapport with his employees. And so I probably patterned a little bit of that after him, but she comes up the hard way, but she gets the School of Hard Knocks education and it's really good, but no degree.
Hard Knocks doesn't give degrees. Who knew? Hey.
Yeah, I know.
So we've talked a bit about Jenny. Let's talk some about Jackie. I'll be honest. She was very hard to like. I imagine that was purposeful. She figures the world, or her grandfather at least, owes her a living without her doing more than occasionally lifting her little finger. So what went into her backstory that made her this extreme of a personality? And why this choice?
Well, she was a little spoiled, you know, and I allowed her to be kind of extremely spoiled was, I think, and I don't want to badmouth any generation, but I think there's been more entitlement in an older woman's opinion in the younger generations. Yeah. You know, there's just a lot of young people, and I don't know if it's from exposure to, you know, what they watch on the internet and all of that, but there's definitely a little bit of entitlement going around. And I thought, why don't I just show somebody at their very worst and then hopefully, you know, teach her something along the way, which if you get to the end of the book, you realize she does learn something, but yeah, I know. Well, I think we wallowed in it a little bit.
But I think I think you're right. I was nodding as you were talking then for anyone on the podcast. And I'll never forget when I went to my son first started school. And so my kids went through the public education system here in Australia. And the first thing they talked about is how your child is the most important person in the world. And we're going to do everything to give your child this and your child that and the best education. And I'm thinking, oh my goodness, we have a generation of disaster that's going to come through if everyone takes on board this rhetoric that's being spoken from people in authority, like in the school system, that community doesn't matter. It's all about you. Get what you want. Doesn't matter what the cost is. And I think that's what we see. And I think I really, in some ways, I felt sorry for Jacqueline, or Jackie as she hated being called, because she really had a lack of good parenting. And unfortunately, her grandmother wasn't around when she ended up moving out with her, where her grandfather was. And so there was reasons as to why the grandfather wasn't able to step in, but she really was lost. And I think what I liked about the story is how that was handled. And I liked where it ended up, if without trying to give away anything, Vinny, without saying
anything. No spoilers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it's a case of true opposites, and that's probably where you were going with that.
Yeah, and they both had strengths and weaknesses, which we see more of in the end of the story. I mean, we kind of tend to think that Jenny's perfect, you know, because she's doing all this stuff, but she's also got a case of all work and no play, and she's never had much of a life, and she kind of needs a little wake up call there. And in a way, Jacqueline sort of helps one way or another to wake her up to that fact, you know. And even just getting into Jacqueline's really posh cabin, which is pretty ironic because the rest of the place is, you know, pretty rustic, but I think it was good for Jenny to see that, even though she was kind of making fun of it, but she liked it too.
Yeah, it's really interesting because what they both really needed to learn was the thing that wasn't the problem for the other person. Does that make sense? Right.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've got, I think I've just forgotten, who's our main character again? Ginny. So Ginny basically needed to loosen up a bit and needed to not be so responsible. Like, she was overly responsible all the time and wouldn't say yes to going out and having fun because it's kind of like she didn't feel like she deserved it, like, or something. There was something going on there. There was a lot of depth to her. And then you got Jackie, who's the other extreme, who thinks that she should never have to do any kind of work and she'll boss everyone around and she doesn't care. She does the bully boss thing. She doesn't care about how her demands affect other people. And She doesn't quite realize that all the people at the camp sort of around her at the fishing lodge have a very different opinion to her to what she has of herself. And I think it takes, I love seeing the journey in the story of her actually learning to see herself more realistically as well.
Yeah. I agree.
I've got a question for you. Go ahead.
And I think, you know, they're both kind of, you know, victims of both the environment they were raised in and their DNA. And, you know, Jenny growing up like that, it's like she was trained to be a workaholic. I mean, she might not have been by nature, but maybe something in her nature glommed onto it. But she, you know, from the earliest ages, that's all she knew was just work, work, work. And the other one was just,
Definitely.
So I'm going to ask you each this question. I'm going to ask Narelle first. If you had the choice of spending a week at that Seattle hotel or a week at the Idaho fishing camp, what would you choose and why?
I would go to the fishing camp. As much as I like the luxuries of life, I love the outdoors. I really do love the outdoors. And I think I could suck it up and cope with less than great accommodation. And it's indoors. It's not like you're camping with snakes crawling around your tent or anything. Everything's in context with snakes and spiders and stuff. I mean, there's no crocodiles lurking around. So, and I mean, a cabin's a cabin. But I think the setting of that Idaho, of the lodge, is I just love to see the river. Like, I just fell in love with that setting. So that's where I would be if I had a choice.
How about you, Melody?
Well, ironically, I would choose the Seattle hotel because I live in a place that's an awful lot like what I wrote about the lodge. I mean, we have lakes and rivers and pine trees, and you just step out our door and you get all of that. So for me, it would be more of an interesting change just for a week. I wouldn't live there. I can promise you that. But just for a week, it would be kind of fun. And like right now, we're snowed in and a little bit of cabin fever going on. So yeah, just for a week, sure.
Yeah, yeah. I grew up in Sydney in the center, pretty much, 15, 20 Ks from the center of the city. So I grew up in suburbia and city. So to me, that's very normal.
Yeah.
Not exciting. And I've been to Seattle as well. So, and I've been up the Space Needle and done some things in Seattle. So probably the fact I've actually been there might factor into my equation as well.
And I swam with crocodiles in Papua New Guinea.
So. Oh my goodness. You're braver than me. And how did you have that opportunity? That sounds fascinating.
We kind of got off track there. I was really young, and I taught on the main base, which was in Ukarempa in Papua New Guinea, but you could go out and visit the villages. And I went out with somebody who lived on the Sepik River there, and she was kind of a crazy gal, and she would swim across the river every day. So I went and swam with her. I was, 19 years old, and why not?
Oh my goodness.
That sounds fun.
Saw crocodiles too. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not even going to comment on what I think of that. I'm just petrified. You're braver than I.
Well, not that anyone asked me, but I'm with Melody. I have beautiful mountains and like a river just outside, and I would probably, you know, if we're talking somebody else paying my way, I'd probably go to the city, but I might have to go by myself because my husband would choose the fishing camp, hands down.
Same here. Same
you and me, here. We can hang out there, you know, and have a little excursion. So anyway, for those of you who are watching and listening, we'd love to know which you would choose. And if you've had a chance to read Just for the Summer, what do you think of job swaps? Would you ever consider doing such a thing, or absolutely not? So please leave a comment on the YouTube or on our Facebook page if you're interested in doing that. But right now we need to wrap up, as fun as it has been. Thanks for joining us today. And Melody, if there's anything else you'd like to tell folks about your book and what you've got going on next and so forth, then please go ahead.
Well, the book releases on March 1st.
Right.
And right now I am just working on my next year's spring-summer novel, which I'm having a lot of fun with.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Slice of life that I won't talk about yet.
All right, fair enough. Thanks everyone for joining us on Story Chats. Please do let us know your thoughts in the comments on YouTube or the Facebook page. You can find information about the podcast at inspiromance.com/storychats. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode. We'll see you next week. Meanwhile, be sure to take time to fall in love with a good book. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.